What's good, Waves of the World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live, as always, from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. But my heart is always in Houston, Texas. This is the Waves of the World. I'm in here with the youngest man to ever manage and operate a casino sportsbook on the Las Vegas Strip. I call him my brother from another. Boy Wonder Sports Betting, Casino Royale.
Wow. What's good, Five Star? What's up, Waves of the World? Hope everybody had a good day today, a good morning to start.
Let's get it. And I'm also in here with the OG of the show, been here with me since day one, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreader Staff?
Man, I'm excited for today's show. We got plenty on the docket. Baseball, college football, and NFL. Can't get any better than this.
Shout out to the Waging World. Remember, it's always us versus the machine. If you're tuned in right now, I'm going to need you guys, before we go any further, to hit that like button. Also, I need you to subscribe. For those who have not subscribed to the show, subscribe. Put in the comments that I subscribe. And Five Star is going to be sending you one of the Supreme Clientele plays. Hey, I need as many subscribers as possible. We get about 200 to 300 guys watching the show every episode for the last three seasons, but these likes aren't equaling up to the amount of traffic that we're getting. I need anyone who steps in here and joins the Waves of the World to do us a favor and hit that like button. Me and my guys, we spend a lot of time getting together this data, giving you real plays that we're spending our real money on. Take time and bring the show. It's free just to show some love to us and give us a like. So please hit that like button right now and please subscribe. And if you put in the comments that I subscribe to the Waves of the World, this is your first time subscribing. No multiple times, guys. Don't try to slick stuff and go in there every day saying you subscribe so you can get the Supreme Clientele plays every day. It's the first time that you subscribe to the show. Please leave a comment that you did so. And hey, we're going to all eat together, because remember, oatmeal always beats no meal. And it's always us versus the machine. We do it for the underdogs and the what's, you know?
Underground.
Yes, sir. Forever, man, we're going to do it like that. Guys, we're everywhere like the air right now. You can catch us on YouTube. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts. You can catch us on Spotify. You can catch us on iHeart. Hey, tune in to the Waves of the World. We're growing. We're expanding. The website is coming soon. Hey, and most of all, we're independent. It's just us. It's us and you guys, because you are the Waves of the World. So show some love right now and hit that like button. Guys, we had a great show for the first show of season three. Talked about a lot of things. We talked about how much we enjoyed the Olympics. I cannot believe that I forgot to talk about the performance by your guy. Well, both you guys got. I think we all respect and love Steph Curry, but we know, Spread, that you have a real, you know, soft spot in your heart for that guy, because he put the bay on his back and brought you guys prevalence in that area of the country. What did you think about that outstanding performance by Steph Curry at the end of the gold medal game?
I liked it. One of the things that Steph has been criticized for before was being a front runner. For example, you know, shooting percentage with the game on the line was a lot less than a shooting percentage when they're up by six or more. So it was great to see him come through in those clutch moments. And I think those ended up being some of the most memorable moments of his career. Obviously, the half-court shot against OKC is going to be tough to beat, but I think it's right up there with that. And adds another layer to his legacy. And another reason why international basketball is so fun, because it just gives these guys an opportunity to perform in different settings.
So, you know, we know all bright dudes. If you're a light skin, you always love Steph Curry. Like, I've never met a light skin dude in my life who didn't like Steph Curry. So we know that's your boy. So what do you think about that performance?
Chef had this on his mind 2 years ago when he won that championship. He said he really done everything that he needed to do, besides when that gold medal. He said he was going to Paris and do so. And he started off sloppy in the first couple of games, and people was talking about him. And, man, that last game, for him to score, I think he had like 24 points and all threes. He ain't make nothing else. Everything was threes. And the performance he put on in the last 2 minutes to to just close it, he just let the whole world see that I'm the best point guard. No disrespect to Magic Johnson. Steph just changed the game of basketball. He about to have everybody shooting threes. But look, they don't even do the normal routine layups no more. Fast break, they stop shoot threes now. That's all because of Steph Curry. Like, he changed the game of basketball. He showed the world that, you know, he's not a fluke. He's an alien. He's different. Like, he real. And I'm glad that we got to witness that, my generation. One of the best basketball players that will ever do it. King James, salute to him. Kevin Durant, the big three, they did their thing. That was phenomenal, man. I loved it. I cried during the when they played Serbia. I never cried during the basketball game. When the people came back and won that shit was
phenomenal. And what did I tweet? That's why I sent it to you directly. Remember, I tweeted, as soon as the fourth quarter started, I had been running a bunch of errands that day. My son Ian had to go to the dentist, and my wife and I were waiting on him to get out from the back. So I missed kind of like that. I was like, dang, I forgot they playing. And then I text somebody in the circle, and they said they're down 15 points. I'm like, what? You know, because they had already blown Serbia out before in the friendlies. USA came in there taking their game lightly, you know, and I knew that. But as soon as I got on, it was the end of the third. They were going in the fourth. They were down 13. I tweeted.
Yes.
Remember I said, we're about to show them why we're America right here. We're about to come back and win this game. Because Jokic was the problem. If Jokic wasn't there, they would have came back. But that was the motivation that they needed, because nobody on the NBA team wanted to hear them talking about Jokic as the best player in the world again. And, you know, they already were saying he should have won MVP of the Olympics because he led the Olympics in so many categories. You know, he's a stat stuffer. And they were already saying he was the best in the world. I know that the USA did not want to lose to that guy. So that was their motivation. And Bogdanovich with the three to the head to Melo kind of motivated them a little bit.
You know why he was beefing with Melo like that?
It was really showing respect later. They hugged each other and they said that he really respected. Did you hear something else?
Nah, I didn't hear nothing else. But, you know, whenever they playing the game of basketball, was going on in the box, it's a whole, you're not no friends right now. But
right.
I'm wondering why. I'm like, why the whole team going against Melo? What did he do?
Yeah.
For them boys to come back and win that game and do what they did, I got to salute them again. It was such a pleasure watching that in real time actually happen. And I could tell my kids and they could tell their kids about it. Like, that was nuts.
The semifinal game was outstanding. They came back. I won, you know, that game on the money line live. And more than anything, like you said, it was bringing tears to a lot of people's eyes.
I cried. Like, seriously,
really patriotic at that moment, and you remember what kind of country kind of makes you think about Brittany Griner. Like, she's on the podium crying now after she wouldn't even stand for the national anthem before. And I'm not one to, you know, knock people for doing that. However you decide to, you know, do the anthem, because due to religious beliefs, I don't stand up for, you know, the anthem, but I love America. It's about religious beliefs. It has nothing to do with the country, because I love my country. And because there's no place like this, no matter what. I've traveled around the world. You can have a good time for a couple of days places, but it's nowhere like America. It's nowhere like home, you know. And the freedom that we afford, a lot of times we take for granted, man. And that team just represented everything that we are in this country with the fight that they showed in that fourth quarter. And I wasn't even worried about France after that, because France really had got to the goal game with a lot of aid from the referees, because they wanted to see France, USA. Don't get me wrong, they're a really good team, but shout out to Wemby. Wemby's the truth. Wemby really showed up for that team. He's going to be a leader. We're going to have problems out of France in 4 years in that game, because you got the two kids from D.C. that are going to be better players by the time, you know, that comes. Both of them are from France as well. One of them, Koula Bobis, he didn't show up really good in the Olympics. He's a couple years away from being a good player, but he has a chance of being really good. But Wembanyama is about to do for that country what I think that Vince Carter did for Canada with basketball, where – you know, all of the kids are looking up to him, knowing that they can make it in the NBA because of him. I'm sure the Jokic is probably doing the same thing for serving kids. We see more and more guys with the ick at the end of their name flowing into the NBA, man. It's just a really exciting game and everything that David Stern dreamed of. What you said about Magic, I don't know, because Magic changed the game as well, because he popularized the NBA. Before that, Spread can tell you the NBA was being shown on like tape delay. You know, Magic and Larry Bird saved the game as we know it today. So he changed the game as well. And also he made the game available where players like LeBron now, who are 6'8", 6'9", the coaches trusted them to handle the ball, because Magic was a unicorn. He was the first of his kind to be 6'9", and playing a point guard with that type of handle, that type of speed, that type of playmaking ability. And also he showed you, so like we forget because me, I'm a little older, Spread's a little older. We had ESPN Classic, and I always talk about that. That was a great benefit for us growing up as kids because Spread and I, in our generation, we could watch, you know, ESPN Classic every day when it's nothing to do with. You're going to see all the old games played again. So I have a different type of respect for Magic Johnson. I saw him play a little bit in the end of his career, you know, but I really, really, really watched him ball out by watching his old tape. And, man, he was phenomenal. Steph can't say as a rookie. Jordan can't say as a rookie. LeBron can't say as a rookie that he won the NBA Finals MVP and went for a 40-point triple-double, you know? So Magic is still, in my opinion, 1A, but I'm going to go with Steph as 1B. The two different type players, but what I will say is Steph has surpassed Isaiah. As you know, that guy that's right up there with Magic. Oh, now he has four of them. He gets one more, he's right up there with Kobe. So no doubt that Wardell, Stephen Curry is an all-time great, all-time. One thing you can't argue with, he's kind of like Jerry Rice about being the greatest receiver. I don't think anyone would argue that Steph Curry was the greatest shooter in basketball history.
Yeah, that's a fact. You can't argue that. And like you just said, about Magic Johnson. Now, you're talking about the views and stuff like that and how, you know, they brought the game back in basketball. This was the most viewed Olympic basketball game in history. They had 20 million views. Again, we can go back. We have the technology to go back and watch all the Magic Johnson games and stuff like that. He did change the game of basketball, but Steph Curry is just, I don't know, bro, he different. Like you say, Magic was an alien. Steph was an alien also.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. I definitely agree. I hear your dog in the background getting involved in the show.
Yeah, she mad.
It's all good. And it's funny that you said that about viewership, because today Colin was kind of talking about viewership Spread, about the fact that how popular even breakdancing was at Olympics. He said that everything was a hit except the women's basketball. It was the least viewed. I didn't see the championship game. It came on at 5:30. I wasn't setting my clock to get up. If I woke up and saw it, I would have, but I didn't. But I'm glad that they won. They won by 1 point. I watched the replay. Quite exciting game. Really, the star of the game was Gabby Williams from France that used to play in the WNBA. And now Angel Reese is asking her to come back to Chicago. But Colin said, boy, they dropped the ball with U.S. women's basketball by not allowing Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese on those rosters. What do you think about that, Spread?
Yeah, because that's the rivalry of the next generation. And they're poised to kind of do for women's basketball what Magic and Bird did in making it popular. And we've seen before, it was really the rivalry that made the league and set it up for Jordan's dominance. But I don't think that Jordan's dominance would have been so well received if we didn't have the rivalry. If you juxtapose those, I don't think that Jordan just winning by himself could have made the sport as popular as what ended up being must-see TV and had to be on primetime when Bird and Magic were facing off in the finals. And the WNBA has a chance to do that, and it's with the idea of its two separate play styles and two separate personalities, but they're close to equal in talent, close to equal in ability, and that's what makes a rivalry great. So they really missed the boat as far as growing the women's game. I'm sure they're fine with it because they got the gold medal either way, right? And they care more about the gold medal than the rankings. But I would agree that they missed an opportunity. I'm a big fan of both, but I really like Angel Reese because I think she's right now she's more complex as far as she's having to take on the villain role. And I don't think that she necessarily wants to yet. So I think it's really intriguing to watch her kind of grow into that and trying to decide what to do and how to market herself rather than a lot of these players, they just get heaps of adulation. She's kind of dealing with both of it right now, and to watch her handle it with maturity, I think I'm really intrigued by her. But if we didn't have Caitlin on the other side to kind of spur what's going on with Angel, I don't know if it would be as compelling. So I do think they missed an opportunity, but they probably don't care because they came home with the gold regardless.
Yeah, they came home with gold regardless. The vets on the team won't be around next run. People like, as we earlier mentioned, Brittany Griner, her running mate, in Phoenix, Diana Taurasi won't be around anymore because these ladies are in their early 40s. So it'll be about the young girls. But I feel like they had a chance really to push the brand of the WNBA. Kaitlyn Clark is, you know, the female version of Pistol Pete, in my opinion. Just a great ball handler, shooting ability, brings a razzle-dazzle to the floor, very competitive, even gets on her own team, you know, sometimes a little too much. And what I like about Angel is Angel's just a consummate teammate, man. She's going to do whatever it takes to win. She loves winning, and whatever it takes to win, you can talk about it, laugh at her, make jokes about it. She gets so many offensive rebounds. That's the haters say because she misses so much, but it's effort. You know, and not only effort, she understands how to play the game. She's a great rebounder, great passer. She's going to get on the floor. And don't be surprised if in the next couple of years she expands her game and becomes a more offensive player and a better shooter, because I've always compared her to Candace Parker. She can do everything Candace can do except shoot, but she's working on it, and she's looked good in the offseason training, you know, keeps up with a lot of WNBA. When do you guys come back with the WNBA? When is the...
I think they come back. I think it's not this Thursday. Right? Next Thursday. Yeah, it's not this Thursday.
They missed a big opportunity because now we got football coming back. We got baseball playoffs.
But,
you know.
But if you guys go to look at it, it was all planned out, because in 2028 the Olympics is gonna be right here, and the United States of America is gonna be in LA. Them girls gonna be seasoned.
Now I'll be there. You talk about New Orleans last time, Super Bowl. I will be there. I'll be there for the Olympics.
Them girls gonna cut up. They gonna be seasoned. Kaitlyn Clark gonna be ready. It's not. They about to go in another gold medal the next 4 years, and they gonna cut up. They gonna cut up. Right, it's gonna be different. I think it was a reason. You know, they let the old head shine. You know, get their time. The vet shine, shall I say? Get their time. Get their goal. And I don't know with the new. And before we move on to the next segment, what y'all think about Team USA in the future, man? Since the big guys are gone. It's about to be a young team now. Tatum didn't play that much.
I'll let the NBA expert answer that.
What you think, Spread?
I think they're fine.
What?
I think they'll continue to win.
Yeah, these other teams playing. You think we fine?
Yeah, because we got 4 more years to develop. Think about how good Anthony Edwards is going to be in 4 years.
Right.
And I know that really Tatum didn't play well, but did he really get that much of an opportunity? Yeah, and if he had to put the team on his back, I think he could have done it. I think it was just one of those cases where he wasn't getting heavy playing time. He was probably a little bit rattled because probably never been in that situation before. He went to Duke, right? I mean, he probably started every good game he's ever played his whole life.
Right, and I just
probably never came off the bench. And there's going to be more guys that are going to continue to develop. Now, of course, you know, Wembanyama might be the best player in the world at that time. But you could have argued that Jokic was the best player on the floor in the Serbia game, and it didn't matter because teammates matter. This isn't a one-on-one game. And I think that the advantage that the U.S. is always going to have is the bench. I think that the European countries, they can continue to produce these stars. But when we go to the bench – they just can't keep up. So as we watch these guys continue to improve, I don't think it's going to be an issue. And as long as we send our best guys, we're always going to win, in my mind.
Keep an eye on Amen Thompson from the Rockets. In 2028, he will be on that team, and he will be electric. Keep an eye on my guy, Amen. Speaking of Houston, I want to apologize to my Texas fans. I misspoke. I confused Art Armstead last show with Denico Autry. I meant to say Denico Autry is a Texan. Now, Armstead is not with the Texans. He's a Jag. So when Malik Collins goes to the 49ers, it's not a switch out. Armstead went to the Jaguars, and instead the Texans picked up another really good player, Denico Autry from the Titans inside the division. Let's review before we get out of the pass. Ceno's winner. You got the Dodgers 5-2 in Milwaukee. Great job, Ceno. What you see in that one?
Man, Kershaw came out. He did his thing, pitched 5 innings. I think he had 6 strikeouts, if I'm not mistaken. Joe Kelly came in. He gave up 1 run. Just like I said, great value, man. Dodgers -110, Kershaw on the road. Easy money. And 5-star, we talked about the Astros earlier that day. And they came through easy too. Also, easy winner. And later on during the show, of course, Ceno got some more winners for you guys. Right now, I'm sweating the Kansas City Royals.
I took them first 5. What's the score right now?
Right now, it is. They just hit a home run as we speak. So it's 3-1. I gave out the First three in that game, Kansas City full game, the under, and no score first inning. So right now it's look like
we're about to sweep. What inning are they in?
Top of the six.
Okay, so I won the first five. I hadn't checked my account on. I put that in early because I knew the Kansas City was coming off getting blown out. Brand new young pitcher in from Minnesota, so I knew to roll with the Royals on that one. Kershaw, great showing. Six strikeouts, only gave up three hits, one earned run. Mookie Betts is back in the Dodgers.
Oh, he's back.
And he sets it off on the first time at bat. He hits a home run and lets him know that he's back. Like, Otani's getting a shine. He's got 37 homers, but we all know that the engine that makes the Dodgers go forever is going to be Mookie Betts. He's just that type of guy. To you, Sino, do the Dodgers win the West?
How they don't win the West? And if they don't...
They don't win the West. They only up 3.5 games on the D-backs and the Padres.
And I totally understand that. But a healthy Dodgers team, man, how you not win the West? And then you added... They just went at Jack. They adding the pieces they need. And if they don't win, bro, with this healthy team, Dave Roberts has to go. He got to go.
They already wanted him out anyway. And I was just about to say, that's the advantage to D-backs. I like the D-backs. I don't know if they win the division. Again? But I think the D-backs will beat them in the playoffs this year because I like Torey Lovullo, who's the manager. He's a sharp guy. He knows how to really manage. And I think he has an advantage on Dave Roberts. Also, the D-backs have a winning record this season against the Dodgers. They don't fear them. And, you know, the D-backs have one of the best batting lineup in Major League Baseball, and they have two of the top pitchers at the top of their, you know, rotation. But the thing that Lovullo does better than Roberts is when it gets the middle relief and bullpen. I don't like Joe Kelly, man. You know, not only is he an Astros hater, but he isn't a good player to me as he was before. He seems like he's lost something since he was in Boston, in my opinion. And then don't sleep on the Padres. Star power goes a long way. They got a lot. I know the Padres have let people down in the past, but you look at it, the Dodgers are 8-2 in their last 10. The D-backs are 9-1 in their last 10. Padres 9-1 in their last 10. So that's clearly the best race in baseball. So the Dodgers are not going to have it easy this year getting out of that National League. And then they also got to worry about the Phillies. Even though the Phillies are struggling currently, I think when playoffs start, they'll be really good. My Astros have roared back in the first place. One or two games ahead of Seattle. I think we hold them out. So impressed by new manager Joe Espada. He's really earned my respect. Beginning of the year, I was on his road because he's a really calm guy. He's a different guy than Dusty. Dusty is one of those guys that's an OG. He give you a look, you know, and when it's really time for it to go down, someone throws at one of the batters or he got to argue at the umpire, he's firing. He's going to check stuff. You know what I mean? This guy, Espada, doesn't get thrown out the games. He doesn't talk a lot. He's more an analytical guy. And I didn't know how the team would respond, but they're very familiar with him. He's been in the dugout several seasons, and we have a really good transition going on with the Astros right now. Kyle Tucker is who I'm waiting to come back because they've done all this without him in the lineup. And when he was in the lineup at the time, I'd say he was the AL MVP, in my opinion. You know, he was really playing well. Yankees, still really a good team. They're one game ahead of the Orioles. You got the Guardians, the Dodgers, and the Yanks tied for the best record in the Major League Baseball. All of them have 71 wins. AL pennant. I know, Spreads, you usually ride with me on the Astros. Can the Astros win the American League this year?
Yeah, it's wide open, and at least for them. And, you know, you talked about the Yankees, but, boy, have they had an up-and-down season. They've been pretty streaky. And when the pressure's on, I think I'd like to go with the team that's going to feel a little less pressure. You know how it is in Houston. They're a little more supportive. New York can be a little more negative, and you can feel it in the stadium sometimes. And I feel like that happens, not to talk too much basketball, with the 76ers sometimes too. Right. I think that sometimes their fan base is so negative, they go down. They go on a bad run in a game, and it's basketball, and it happens, and you just feel the arena. It doesn't feel like home. Court advantage anymore. I think that can happen sometimes with the New York Yankees, with the expectations being so high from that fan base. Where Houston, you know, obviously you guys are disappointed when you lose, but it feels like they organically support their team more, win or lose, and it's probably because they haven't been spoiled with the same success.
Yeah, the Yankees have one player that I fear in the postseason. And that's Juan Soto. Man, I feel like he was the perfect addition because we've had their number. Like we killed
three home runs last night.
But Juan Soto, Juan Soto is a hell of a player, man. And he's one of those type of guys who likes to lift teams in the postseason. We saw him beat our Astros with the Nationals before the Nationals were even really.
Yeah, when I first moved to Vegas.
Yeah, they weren't even supposed to beat us at that time. And that's why I don't want to hear the stuff that people try to tell me about, you know, the Astros best manager ever stuff. You know, that guy that's out in Detroit is not better than Dusty Baker. I'm just tell you that. But he blew that one because we had the clear better team and lost. But it was because Juan Soto really put on a show. So that's the only thing I worry about with the Yankees. Besides that, I'll still be playing the Astros. They're at 12-1 right now. Plus 1,200 is a great ticket to put in your back pocket. Also, the D-backs are at 2,000. They're at 20-1 to win the World Series, and I'll be the Huckleberry.
And for, hey, I hear you laughing, but imagine it was August last year, and I told you I'm going to put a Rangers ticket in. You'd be laughing too, right? I mean, right. That's where baseball gets wild.
I don't know about laugh at the Rangers, man. Rangers got some bets. Again, I watch baseball every day. I've been watching.
Yeah, I know. I know your guys are way more up and on it than me, but I'm just saying.
I watch it every day. Like
I watch it every day too.
Baseball's to me the biggest crapshoot in the postseason.
The D-backs at home are almost an automatic bet. You tell me if I'm lying since you watch so much baseball.
Almost automatic. That one was lost to the Rockies last night. The
D-backs, come on. That don't count. I'm talking about when they playing the Dodgers, the Padres, the Giants.
Hey, and again, when it's time to play those teams, they going to be in trouble. The D-backs not beating the Dodgers in those series.
Who won
the
last year?
Dodgers fall victim to pressure too, in those postseason situations.
So we don't know about this year yet, but we know for sure what happened last year.
We definitely know what happened last year.
There we go.
Yeah, we know that. And they won. Yes, they was a great team last year. Shit, they damn near won the World Series. Like,
if guys have any extra, you know, little bank account to try something to make an investment on the future, Cino likes to roll with the favorites. He's one of the dudes that bet the Yankees, the Lakers, and the Dodgers. So,
oh my God. You want to juice
out. You got to get juiced out, man. You know me, I'm a dog. They'll do it for the underdogs and the underground, man. I got to go with the dogs. I like the value in the D-backs right there. All right, let's jump into, I guess we can get into that brand new Rory FF that they just did. They did a brand new one. They got a ridiculous price on it. The old FF about 200. This new one they did is like 500. And it's not worth it. It's a Ferrari buggy. We don't want that. But we'll jump in it for right now. And we're going to be to the present. All right, man. It's time to break down a couple of these conferences and division. Let's get to the ACC conference. Kick it out for us, Fred.
Yeah, my first thoughts is how is California in Berkeley in the Atlantic Coast Conference? They gone a little too far with this
Stanford
realignment.
Little, though. They took Stanford a little.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of weird to see Cal and Duke in the same conference, and both of them have long odds. I'm looking at the odds right now. It looks like Clemson is the favorite to win the ACC, but in the past, we've seen a minus next to that number, right? And right now they're plus 361. So this isn't the shoe-in that it's always been. Second is Miami, Florida, return of the U. That's good for college football. That's a story program. And what was it? Convicts versus Catholics when we were, in our prime. And I love that rivalry. I'd like to see them come back there at plus 400. I'm seeing NC State third here in the odds at plus 671. After that, Louisville. All right. You know, not just a basketball school anymore. And I think if I remember right, their basketball team's terrible right now. So it's just funny how things changed. They're plus 726.
Florida State's favorite, right?
I'm sorry. I left them out. They're plus 250. Yeah, that makes sense. They're the defending champions. They were undefeated going into the last game of the season. And they sat everybody in their bowl game and got blown out because they had the injury to the quarterback, right, going into the bowl game anyways.
Yeah, Travis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is why they had a good argument to even make the Final Four. Unfortunately, this year those arguments won't be had because they definitely would make the top 12 last year. So I'm sorry, I did leave Florida out, the true favorite, followed by Clemson, NC State, then Miami, then Louisville, then Vatek, and of course we have some other long shots. It's a big conference now, Five Star. How are you approaching this?
17 teams in this conference. Just to go off the one you said, off the muscle, you got to like Florida State just because Mike Norvell is a really good coach. They have a really good roster coming back. Defense is the name of the game for Florida State. DJ Uiagalelei is a step back. Simple as that. DJ Uiagalelei is not the quarterback that Jordan Travis was, but Jordan Travis was a runner until Mike Norvell came in. He was not the passer that he became and grown to the end of where he ended up getting drafted to the NFL. And that's all thanks to, you know, Coach Cornrows. That's what I call Mike Norvell, because when he was a quarterback, he had cornrows. He was like you, Spread. The white kid in the hood with the cornrows. So Mike Norvell, really good coach. He's proved himself. They kick off the season, actually, on my birthday. It's the first game of the college slate, guys. I look forward to that. They play Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So we'll see quickly if DJ Uiagalelei has picked up anything, because he just left, you know, a really good quarterback coach, Jonathan Smith at Oregon State, and we didn't see much of change. He started hot. He looked pretty good, kind of like he did at Clemson. But as the year ended, he wasn't starting anymore. Aiden Childs was the quarterback. So I just can't trust DJ. But I like what they do have around him. The next team said it was Clemson. Dabo is never going to have the teams in Clemson that he had before, unless he – only thing that he can really recruit now is kids from that area who family are really family-oriented, Christian values. That's what they look to him for, because he kind of turned off a lot of players with the way that he attacked the system. He was one of those guys that when things were changing and everybody was starting to get ready to pay players – he was one of those guys that was a huge detractor. And he said a lot of things that a lot of kids and the teams around these kids, because, you know, these kids have teams now, kind of like how AAU is. These kids have a whole squad around them making them successful now by the age of 15, 16 in college football with the money that's on the line. And he turned off a lot of the people who are helping these kids get these NIL deals, turned off a lot of the boosters, and he turned off a lot of the players' families and the players themselves with the way that he approached it. Change is good. You know, sometimes you have to be one of those guys who can deal with change, and he didn't deal with it well, and now his program is paying for it. He does have an outstanding linebacker over there, you know, but that's what Clemson's known for. They're going to always have a good defense. Barry Carter is a baller. He's going to play in the NFL. He's going to be one of those next great linebackers, but he does have that going. You got Cade Klubnik. Was a great player in Texas. This is like now his second year starting. I'll be very interested when Florida State hosts Clemson. We'll see how DJ Uiagalelei plays against his old team. That'll be surely one of the games to decide the ACC. Miami, they have all the talent. You know how much I love Cam Ward. Spread, you know I've been talking about Cam Ward since he was playing at that little school in Texas. You know, when he was playing way back then. At Incarnate Word, I was telling people, have you seen this guy, Cam Ward? Like, this kid's different. He has the speed, he has the arm, he's accurate, super strong arm. He went to Washington State. Cristobal took advantage with him, you know, having his Oregon background from being the head coach there for a few seasons, saw what was going on with the Pac-12 ending and was able to poach from Washington State and Oregon State, who are now two teams that are basically the Pac-12, but they don't have a conference. You know, they just have something where they can go play against the Mountain West, but they can't win the Mountain West. It's some weird stuff. I don't know if they're going to redo the Pac-12, what they're going to do. But he took advantage of that and took Washington State's starting quarterback in Cam Ward, who had transferred from Incarnate Word. Cam Ward, as I said, outstanding play. He will play in the NFL. I don't know if he becomes a starter, but he will get a shot. They also got a running back from Oregon State, Damon Martinez, a Texas boy. This kid is a monster. And the world is about to learn his name in Miami. Really strong kid, electric, fast, sees the whole world, great vision. I expect a lot from him. The thing that's going to hold Miami back is Mario Cristobal. He's a great recruiter, great at making NIL deals. He lacks on the X and O's. Remember last year, one of the biggest bumbles we've seen ever in college football when all they have to do is take a knee to run the game out and get the victory. And like an idiot, he runs a play, fullback fumbles. They end up getting upset at home. So we'll see if Mario Cristobal can tighten it up. Can he hire the right assistants? NC State, Dave Doran always does a really good job with them. Always has them as a sound program. They usually lose early, and they're probably going to lose this year early because they have a really tough slate early. They play Tennessee and Charlotte on the September the 7th. Then on the 21st, they go to Clemson. So they'll probably get behind the eight ball early like they've done in the past. But they do have a guy that I really like in Grayson McCall going over there. Another one of my guys, Fred, that I've talked to about for a lot of years. He was at Coastal Carolina getting us some money. We were rolling with him when they were winning at Coastal Carolina before their coach went to Liberty. And now he's at NC State. I think he does good with Dave Doran. He was a little beat up from he has a style that he plays kind of like Carson Wentz, kind of loose. He can really play athletic and throw the ball over the field, but doesn't know how to slide. He took a lot of unnecessary hits over the last couple seasons, and those hits have piled up on him, and he missed some games the last at the end of the back end of the season last year before transferring. So let's see if he's healthy. If he's healthy, he's a big time player, and I think that with his experience, he'll be able to take NC State different heights with their program this year. They have a really good receiver coming back in Kevin Concepcion. He's another one that'll be playing on Sunday. As you said, they added three teams, SMU, Cal, and Stanford. Weird as it seems, they're all now a part of the ACC, flying all the way across the country to play football. And now the kids in the Carolina area get a chance to go out west a couple times a year. Out of all of those teams, the only one that I expect something from is SMU. SMU has a really good team. They have a really good coach. I really like Brett Lashley. They have a good problem. Their starting quarterback, Preston Stone, who was chunking it all over the field last year, was putting up numbers, was hurt about midseason. And then he comes back now this year, but they had their freshman come in who was a superstar at Oak Cliff, the Dallas area, Kevin Jennings. Kevin Jennings is a baller. He just needs time to play. So Lashley said that he was going to use both of them. I don't know how that's going to work because Preston Stone was the solid starter all year until getting injured. But Kevin Jennings, I'm surprised he didn't transfer. But they have a lot of money coming through that Dallas area, so they were probably able to give him something to keep him happy until his time comes to start. But he will be the leader of that team in the near future. And then they also have a great tight end with SMU, R.J. Maryland. I really like him a lot. Overall, when I look at this division, man, I honestly, it's one of the most confusing divisions to pick. I probably would only do a flyer. Like, we know that it's pretty much a logjam at the top of the conference, the normal people, which is Clemson, North Carolina State, in my opinion, and Florida State, with Miami on the outside looking in, even though they have all the talent. As I said, they don't have the coaching staff that I can trust. North Carolina, Mac Brown's back again. He got Max Johnson over there now. He was at A&M and LSU. That's Brad Johnson's kid. I don't know how good he's going to do, but he does have a great running back over there with North Carolina, Marion Hampton. He's one of those kids that's going to definitely be a starter. The Javonte Williams type player that's going to be playing on Sundays. But overall, as I said, I'd have to just take a flyer. It would be a value bid for me. And my value bid would probably be Virginia Tech, just because you have Brent Pry with 17 starters coming back. You got Kyra Drones, who's an electric quarterback, and you know it's really tough to win in Blacksburg. They have a sound tradition. I'd probably take a flyer on them just to, you know, to where I can start hedging by the time the championship game came, because I believe the championship is just the top two teams in the league. It's no divisions anymore. So what's the number on Virginia Tech? It should be probably 2,000 or something, right?
I only got plus 970 here on Bookmaker, okay, the offshore book. So what that's saying to me is a lot of people are agreeing with you. Bookmaker is quick to move their lines off sharp movement. They don't, they're the best. If you're worried about getting limited, sign up for an account there. If you're struggling with DraftKings and FanDuel,
right,
and they're only letting you play $25 a game, bookmakers happy to use your information, and they just move their lines heavy. So what's this saying to me is other people are on Virginia Tech as well. And I think the key to this is, and sometimes, right, we're talking about specific things and helping you learn more about the ACC, but it's a gambling idea where, hey, 3 to 4 different teams up top, they all have a good possibility to win, but we don't think the odds give us a lucrative enough payout for it to be worth the investment. Look for a long shot, and I think that's what other offshore bettors are doing.
Yep, I agree with you. Who do you like to win the ACC, Sino?
Clemson. Why not? They closed out last season at what? I think it was 5 straight wins. Started off with Notre Dame. 13 starters returning from last year. They got their quarterback again from last year. Their defense led the ACC in the fewest total yards. I think they step up. They do what they need to do.
They definitely had a tradition. They definitely have a coach who's had a lot of success nationally. What's that number on Clemson?
Clemson, offshore right now, +360. I like second that highest value. Florida State, +250.
I like that value Cino's giving you right there with Clemson because they definitely have a shot to win the ACC. Now let's get into the professional football league now and talk a little bit about, since we started out West, we're going to start West and go East, man. We did the NFC West on Monday. Let's go to the AFC West. What we got, Spread?
All right. Well, of course, the top of the card will be dominated by the Kansas City Chiefs, who have won the AFC West 8 years in a row. And barring injuries, it's going to be hard to see them not doing that again. I was really high on Jim Harbaugh. I think he's a great coach. I saw what he did with the 49ers team when he came in. I can't remember the exact year, right? But he didn't really turn over the roster that much. And he took a 5-win team and got them into the playoffs his first year there. And I think that shows his coaching acumen. What's having me have concerns about the Chargers is this recent injury to Justin Herbert. Now, we're getting varied reports out of there. But the one report that I can be sure of is he's missing training camp time. And the fact that he's in a new system with new players, I think that's going to be trouble here for the Chargers as they try to adapt. So while I was high on the Chargers, an injury to their star quarterback, maybe taking a little longer to get into rhythm with these new players. Ladd McConkey, I know he's got a little bit there with Josh Palmer. Didn't really have much of a rapport with Quentin Johnston last season. And there's questions about whether or not he's really going to be an NFL caliber star. Obviously, he'll have a place on the team, but can he really change games? Still a question mark for the Chargers there. So I'm worried going against, you know, the elite pedigree of the Kansas City Chiefs. Will a slow start doom them to wild card or bust here? So that's what we're looking at there. The other two teams in the division, of course, my favorite team, the Las Vegas Raiders, kind of a change of identity for this team throughout the Derek Carr years. The offense kind of carried them, and it was, could the defense get the stop at the end of the game? Most of the times they couldn't, which is why that team was ultimately unsuccessful. But now you look at this team and the addition of Christian Wilkins, they were already playing well on defense last year. They were already becoming defensive-minded team last year under the excellent coaching of Patrick Graham. You add those couple of pieces, not a lot of significant losses. And my idea is you look at Crosby and Wilkins on the front line. I think they're going to cause a lot of havoc for other teams. Now, instead of the question is, will the defense be able to keep up? It's going to be, will the offense be able to score enough and keep that defense off the field long enough for both units to be effective? I'd say that's still up in the air. Minshew did all right with Indianapolis last season. Aiden O'Connell maybe still has the inside track to be the starter, but it's tough to see how this thing goes. If they do end up being good, I think it's because Brock Bowers will be better than maybe is expected right now. I think that if you went to any other team besides the Las Vegas Raiders, who already had Michael Mayer at tight end, he would be much higher in these fantasy rankings if he would have ended up on Los Angeles or in Houston or in Jacksonville, a place like that. So that's going to be the big question there. For the Raiders. I think they'll do a little better than expected. Their win total 6.5. I think they have a good chance to go over that. Still not sure if I believe that this is a playoff team. And we talked about your guy, Sean Payton, before, and he's got his work cut out for him. But I think the Bo Nix is better than we've expected, or than people are giving him credit for. And I think the important thing that he's going to do is limit turnovers. He was able to do that at Oregon. And I think if he does that, in Denver, with behind Peyton's play calling, they can get things done. Another concern for Denver, of course, is they had the most dead cap money in the league after making that Russell Wilson blunder. So don't know if they're ready to compete yet. The signs for Denver this year is, can they get Bo Nix in there? Can he be a competent starter? And can this team be competitive week in or week out? Because we saw last season there's times where they would keep it close and play good, and other times where they did not show up at all. So I think Denver will also do a little better than expected. I think this division should be pretty good. Denver's win total is at 5.5. I wouldn't be surprised if they went over, but still weren't that good of a team. But until Mahomes gets hurt or Andy Reid retires, this is the Kansas City Chiefs division, and I'm not going to go against that. If I were to bet, I'll go under on the Chargers. I think the Raiders and the Broncos both go over their win totals, but don't think it'll be enough for there to be playoff appearances.
Great breakdown. Got new coaches in the AFC West, man. We got Jim Harbaugh, as we said, coming in. Won everywhere he's been. He won in San Diego as the coach. He won in Stanford as the coach. He won in Michigan as the coach. So why would we think anything different when he gets to L.A. now? Why would we think anything different? He has a great team. They got a good roster with the Chargers, man. The Chargers... they got Justin Herbert, they got Gus Edwards, and they got Dobbins. You can tell the Harbaugh brothers are tight, right? Because obviously, with him getting two ex-Ravens players, he probably got them signed off by his brother, you know, John.
Well, he also brought over Greg Roman, who worked for John.
And got Greg. They share so much information. A lot of people, they don't consider the fact that Jim was probably just as important to the growth of the offense of the Ravens as John, because a lot of people forget that when Lamar first came in, the Ravens were not that type of team. They were a drop-back style team. They run the ball, play action, go deep. With his brother, Jim, coaching Kaepernick, they kind of changed the game with the 49ers with their style of offense, the type of offense that they were running there with the pistol and things like that and the mobile quarterback. And a lot of people forget that he basically gave his brother the playbook and, you know, some different little nuances to use for the Ravens, for Lamar Jackson, and it's been outstanding for him. So those brothers are really tight. You can tell they share a lot of information with each other. And he obviously signed off on, you know, Gus Edwards and Dobbins, because now he's playing for, you know, for John. I mean, John, they were playing for John, now they're playing for Jim. They also have Joey Bosa, we forget about it, Khalil Mack, two of the best defensive ends in the league, Derwin James, great corner, Asante Samuels. And what do we always know Harbaugh for doing? He's always known for being able to get more physicality out of teams when he arrives. You can never count out Jim Harbaugh. Antonio Pierce, interim title removed. He's turned the whole identity around of this team. They're back to the old school Raiders. That's, you know, defense first, playing black and blue type of games and things like that. They let go of Josh Jacobs. This is all Antonio Pierce's work. He let go of Josh Jacobs. Obviously, he saw something that he thought that, you know, was maybe he was losing a step. And just a regular running back that they have no money invested in the running back position right now. Marcus Peters, he lets him go as well. They're really working on a budget over it down the street from me in Henderson, you know. But it works right, because I think that Antonio Pierce is just that type of guy that wants to play the same type of style of football that he played when he was a Giant and was the starting linebacker there and won Super Bowls under Tom Coughlin. Disciplined football, you know, field position, being smart, no turnovers, playing good defense, sound defense. Superstar Max Crosby. Crosby's, I think, is the number one player right now with Aaron Donald leaving. You know, probably in the NFL on defense. Max Crosby is probably the guy that offensive coordinators and head coaches worry about the most when they're game planning for a defender. Crystal Wilkins, as you said, joins him. Marcus Peters gone. Now Jack Jones, who I happen to know, his little brother JT is a friend of mine. Jack Jones was a star, man. He was cold at Long Beach Poly. He was nice in college. He just had a couple hiccups out there in New England up in Massachusetts. But being a kid like he is from Long Beach, you know, a hood kid that came from, you know, around the way and, you know, was part of the activities. It had to be kind of hard going up there to New England and dealing with the discipline of Belichick, you know, and all that. So now he's kind of settled in. He's close to home of being in Vegas. And I think Jack Jones is going to do well as the number one cornerback for the Raiders. I think he slept on. I think he has a chance to be an all pro. I really believe in his talent that much. So the Raiders, hey, they have a chance to get in the playoffs. A lot of people are going to sleep on them. I'm going to be taking them with some points this year. I think that they have to go with O'Connell, though. I don't like Gardner Minshew. He turns the ball over too much. I know that he can put more points up for you. I know that he can bring more electricity, but he also brings some pretty poor decision-making. I think that Aiden O'Connell will do a better job managing that team, and they must think pretty highly of him. Being that Mark Davis allowed him to wear Kenny Stabler's number 12 now. And I could not believe that when I saw him out there wearing number 12. So they obviously think pretty highly of that kid. Then you go to the stalwart of the division. We already know Kansas City. We don't even have to talk too much about them. You know, Andy Reid, I think that Pat Mahomes lost his first game on the road in the AFC West in his whole career last year. That was the first time in 4 to 5 seasons that he had ever lost on the road. That's how much he's dominated this division. He's never lost a division. He's won it every year, and I'm pretty sure they're going to win it again this year. They don't lose anything. They still have Mahomes, still Kelce, still Chris Jones, still Nick Bolton. Just really a good team. Still Steve Spagnuolo, you know, calling things. So I see no fall off from Kansas City. The sky's the limit. Watch for a kid named Carson Strong that's joined Kansas City. And I know that Andy Reid loves new toys to play with. Carson Strong is a baller. I've been on him since Ball State when he was playing in the MAC, when I bet all of those MAC Wednesday games, right? He's a big, strong, good-looking kid, has long blonde hair hanging out the back of his helmet, and has a pet alligator. He's a wild kid, but he really runs that ball hard and fast, and he looked good in preseason. He was with UCLA last year, but he had some injuries that kind of slowed him down. But don't be surprised if Carson Strong end up being, you know, getting some carries with this team. They also got Carson Wentz as the backup now. So we'll see if Andy Reid can help him get his game back together. Then we have Sean Payton and the Broncos. I'm super high on Bo Nix, as I told you. I think that he'll start this year, and I think he'll do decent. He's an older kid. He's played a lot of football. It's not going to overwhelm him with this, you know, the type of stadiums that he played in the SEC and in the Pac-12. So I think that he'll be fine. The offense looked a lot better with him. They add Josh Reynolds from the Lions to the Broncos. Troy Franklin, who was Bo Nix's number one target at Oregon, this kid has a lot of speed. And even though Denver has a kind of unknown roster, they do have some talent. Like Javonte Williams is on his second year off of that ACL. He's a really good running back. Can he get the juice back? He didn't look like he had it last year. He didn't look like the guy he was before the injury. Usually takes 2 years. Let's see if he bounces back and becomes electric again. And then you got Pat Surtain, who a lot of people say might be the number one cornerback in the league. So a really talented AFC West. I think that we all know that KC is going to win the division. I think the bigger question is which one of these teams outside of Kansas City can contend for a wild card spot. Who do you like to make the playoffs out this division, Ceno?
You got to be for real, 5-star. Kansas City Chiefs, 5-star. Like,
well, we know they're going to win the division. Who's going to make the playoffs outside of them?
That's the Chargers. Why wouldn't I say them? Like you just said, is a winner. Jim Harbaugh, he definitely a winner. I'm so happy after last year with the damn Chiefs 5-star, what they did to me. Like I'm still, I warned you, and you did. And that's why I'm saying I don't give a damn who go in that division and what it is. Ain't nobody beating Kansas City, man. Like that's just what it is. It's the new Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls that's what it is. Like it's all that other stuff sound good in the NFL, look good. Patrick Mahomes is different. When it's time to win, he winning. Simple as that, man. Like,
I will say though, and I understand your process. She knows on the KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Don't even think about all the the Chiefs is easy money. Take the Chiefs. So I agree with him for sure on that. But one thing that I will consider also in this, is the fact that the Chargers have been playing Kansas City really good the last 3 years. Now, was that Brandon Staley, who he had to get rid of because he was the star, kicked the damn extra point on here because he always was doing his little Madden stuff and trying little crazy things, you know, at the wrong times in the game, things that you wouldn't expect, fourth and fours from his own 20.
Yeah, and like that. And stuff like that. You're right.
Just mismanaging the team, just trying things, you know, trying to be a little bit too daring. And it came back to bite him. And he actually affected Justin Herbert's career quite negatively because I'm sure that Herbert is running and getting criticized for, you know, not winning the playoff game. But how many times was he in position and Brandon Staley did something silly, you know? So the Chargers are used to playing with Kansas City. Now, I think that most veteran teams like they are, they're going to ride what they're used to doing. And what they're used to doing is playing really well, whether Brandon Staley's there or not, against the Chiefs. Can Harbaugh put them over the top with his physicality? We see the defensive line that they have. Can they put Mahomes on his back, you know, and make him feel that defense? Can Derwin James maybe, you know, take Kelce out the game? Asante Samuel's able to, you know, get a pick here or there. And if they can split this season with the Chiefs, I think it'll go a long way in the Chargers for success because you need confidence to get over a juggernaut like the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, man. So everybody pretty much agrees on this. We like the Chiefs.
Chargers are the biggest question mark in that division. I can see them being really good and actually challenging the Chiefs for that AFC West title, right, if Harbaugh gets in there. Because I like some of the things that he did as far as – he said, I'm not paying money for guys on the outside. My money goes to Khalil Mack. It goes to Joey Bosa. And my first-round draft pick, you can have Marvin Harrison. You can have Brock Bowers. You can have Malik Nabers. I'm getting the best tackle in the draft, and I'm going to win at the line of scrimmage. So I can see that working. My concern is just that Herbert will not get the reps with these guys for that offense to be fluid until it's too late because of this injury. And we know with plantar fasciitis, it could pop back up in the middle of the season too. This isn't like a rolled ankle or a broken bone where we know once it's healthy, it should just be 100%. This could be something that lingers throughout the season. So that's why that team is a big question mark to me. I feel like you can make great arguments on both sides, whether or not you like them to go over or under their win total of 8.5.
We've broken that down. Let's go to what matters, man, people segment. Let's get into this ball and parlay and give out some winners. Spread, you had a tough one.
With Stern. You know, we like to do that, right, when we take the player coming off the big win. It doesn't always work, but some of these tried-and-true systems, we just stick with them, and I'm going with another tried-and-true system today to bounce back here, and that's I love taking American players in North America. I like fading them in Europe, right? We all know who can do well, but for the most part, it feels like their level really drops. And then they come back home where they've grown up. Most American players rarely play on clay. I remember growing up, playing on clay was like a big deal. You know, there's a couple clubs in all of Northern California that have it, and they're real expensive to get into. So now we're back on hard courts, and that's why I'm going to take Brandon Nakashima at minus 128 tomorrow in the Cincinnati tournament. We know that Cincinnati plays fast. We know that the powerful American serving forehand style should play well there. And I think we're getting a pretty good price. I know that Arthur Fields is really good, so I understand why this line is where it is. But I think that these Americans are a little undervalued, especially at the very beginning of the North American swing. And because of the Olympics, I think that some of the play has already been a little bit overshadowed. So we're still getting that kind of early North American swing value. Give me Brandon Nakashima to win against Arthur Fees at minus 128.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I actually took Nakashima and won with him yesterday at plus 170 against Fritz. I took it live. Fritz has been... he's been a little down lately. He's one of those type of players. He's really good, but when he gets into that mode and gets like, you know, near the end of the season.
And the difference in the ATP now is before these top 10, top 20 guys, they could win when they're not on their best day. I would say the level of the 20th player to the 100th ranked player is so much higher than it was 20 years ago that these guys have to be on all the time. And that was simply a case of Fritz not being there and Nakashima taking advantage. But he's got to feel good coming off that win. And for a player like Nakashima, who really needs these points, this tournament means a lot. There's no reason for him to save himself for a potential U.S. Open run. 1,000 points in Cincinnati or even a final appearance could jettison him up the rankings a good 5 to 10 spots. So I like Nakashima's motivation coming in here, and you made a great point how he was able to take advantage of Taylor Fritz when he wasn't at his best.
Yeah, and Fritz, a lot of people don't know that his mother is from the May family. They own Macy, so he's a pretty wealthy kid, kind of like Pagulia, and kind of like also who I gave out on the last ball of parlay. Did you know that Emma Navarro's dad owns the ATP side of the Cincinnati Open?
Yeah, she does pretty well for herself, too. And you know what? I'm always inspired by those people, though, because it'd be so easy for them to rest on their laurels. There's no reason that Pagula needs to go out. And we know that tennis training takes over your life. That's why, let's be honest, a lot of them are weirdos. A lot of them are pretty awkward because you get sent to a camp at age 13. You're only around other tennis players. You don't have a normal high school. You don't go to prom. You know what I'm saying? You don't have that normal dating scene and the social interaction. So for them to make those sacrifices when they didn't need to, I think it's pretty admirable.
Definitely. Sino and I, daughters, hope to one day be a part of that circus. All right, Sino, what you got for the ball and parlay? You'll want to know. You hit your last one. What you got for the people today?
I get a peep of two picks today. Why not? That'd be nice.
Okay.
Let's take the Dodgers again, since he said I like to always bet the Dodgers. We take the Dodgers. We got Buehler on the mound against Montas. I think that'd be a good pick. And you take the Astros again. I think they win streak continue. We just keep it simple as that.
So Sino's going with the Dodgers and the Astros for you two straight bets. Me and Spread were actually off air talking about this game. He knows how you can take the Astros. The Astros are betting. The only reason I didn't bet it is because when I was doing my research, Blanco, bad games he had this year was against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And then the kid on the mound for Tampa Bay, Latrell, really pitched good against the Astros. He's 2-0 or 3-0 in his career against the Astros. And this year, they had a real difficult time hitting them out. But my Astros are hot. They need every game. So you're never wrong betting Dodgers and Astros. So Sino has been hot on the MLB. He says go with the Dodgers and the Astros. I'm going to leave the hard courts. And after we see what M. Navarro does, that match is kicking off in about 15 minutes that I gave him on Monday against Mira Andreeva. But I'll go to the diamond with my little brother Sino. I'm going to be on the Giants tonight, man. The Giants have struggled. And they lost three straight games. They lost the two first games against the Braves in the series. As you know, they were just hot. They got above 500. They're on the outside looking in with a real chance still at the wild card. Giants are a really proud organization over the years. They have a veteran going to the mound tonight in Robbie Ray, who I think can lift them up. The last three games that they did lose, they only lost by one run. I think that they get it done. They've been routinely a really good home team as well. I just think that the Giants will be ready for this game. I think Bob Melvin, veteran manager, knows they cannot drop this one. You got a kid on the mound for the Braves who I don't know too much about, one of his first starts. I just trust right now Robbie Ray over him in a must-win situation for the Giants. So give me the San Francisco Giants to get it done tonight at Oracle Park, hosting the Atlanta Braves. All right, guys, we appreciate you for tuning in. If you just got that ball and parlay, I'm going to need you to hit that like button. If you're going to play any of those plays, I need you to hit that like button right now. Remember, we do this for free. We get this to you guys for the love of the sport. We do this for the love of betting sports. You are the wagering world. Now show us that you love us as well and hit that like button. Let's get these likes and subscribers up to where we need to be. The goal is 1,000 subscribers. I know 1,000 people have watched this show, so we need 1,000 subscribers locked in with the Waging World. Once again, we're everywhere. You can catch us if you don't have time to watch it on the YouTube. You can always catch it on iHeart. You can catch it on Apple podcast. You can catch us on Spotify. Listen to us while we're out. I listen to you guys because you guys said in the comments, a lot of you last season, sometimes you couldn't hear because of the music. So what we do is we're coming in with the music and we're bringing it out this year so you can really hear us break down these games and get some of this expertise from three respected bettors. All right. Anything for the people before we get out of this spread?
Man, I'm excited. These previews keep coming in and it just makes me looking much forward. I know you're looking forward to your birthday for other reasons, but I'm looking forward to your birthday for that opening kick of the college football season. We get 2 weeks of college football and then we dive right into the NFL. It's some of my favorite time of year. Five Star, I've been diving into history podcasts because I'm just burned out on this. I've heard so many NFL previews, right? And that's why we're giving you guys the information because you probably haven't been listening to as much as us. But I can't wait for the weekly in and out, each individual matchup, breaking down the tape, seeing what the scouts see, seeing which way these lines are moving. NFL and college football cannot get here soon enough for me.
I can't wait till 9 a.m. on my birthday. I'll already be on the strip because I already have a room at the Venetian, and I'm going to just walk right downstairs and probably cross the street to go to Caesar Sportsbook and load up. I would think Florida State, with them coming off of that bowl showing and all the injuries, I think that Mike Norvell is going to want to start strong and kind of put on an exhibition because he knows the whole world will be watching. But Georgia Tech is really good. A lot of starters back. Haynes King's the quarterback is back, but he turns the ball over. And Georgia Tech also has some good defense. Can DJ Uiagalelei make the throws necessary to get the victory for Florida State? But we'll talk about that more as we get closer. We're only 10 days away from the start of college football. What you got for the people, Cino, before you get out of here?
We're keeping it simple, man. We do this the whole season for my man Kingston, man. King Money, just like that. We keep it pushing. Again, man, y'all make sure y'all hit that like button. Hit that bell button up there. Subscribe. The Waging World, we're doing this every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Winners, baby.
All right, you heard my little brother. He wrapped it out perfect as always. This show is dedicated to the greatest Houston sports fan that I know, my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad, and for all season long. We're going to be doing this for our boy, R.I.P. Kingston, man. We'll see you guys on Friday.